Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is side two of For the Record program number 538, titled Bush's Buddy, the Acquittal of Sammy the Aryan. This is being recorded on December 11th of the year 2005. What we're going to be doing once again is to revisit the subject, and revisit from side one, the subject of the acquittal of Sammy al-Aryan. Sammy al-Aryan is a Palestinian of Kuwaiti extraction who for some time has been active on behalf of Palestinian causes in the United States, and who this past week was acquitted of terrorist activities in the middle of some rather bizarre legal maneuvering. As you heard in our interview in side one, the judge in this case, a fellow named Moody, ruled that Sammy al-Aryan would have to be acquitted if it could not be proved that the money that he donated to Palestinian Islamic Jihad, or to the Muslim Brotherhood, was specifically used to commit terrorist acts. Well, there's no way something like that could be proved. As you heard in side one, there was a wiretap of Sammy al-Aryan railing against the fact that a killing by Hamas, a terrorist act by Hamas, was being claimed by Hamas, which he had actually helped to engender. As we're going to look at in this side, there were a number of other interesting aspects to the acquittal of Sammy al-Aryan, including the fact that key documentation was, quote, accidentally, unquote, destroyed by Justice Department employees, the fact that the statute of limitations had expired on many of these charges, and the fact that, once again, time had intervened in such a way as to basically neutralize many of the prosecutions that could have taken place. Do note, again, that Sammy al-Aryan, or Sammy the Aryan, as I call him, was closely allied with George Bush and with the Republican Party, and GOP bigwig Grover Norquist was basically running interference, not only for Sammy al-Aryan, but also for people like Abdurrahman al-Amoudi, other members of the SAR network and the Safa Trust, which in turn basically was a Saudi-slash-Muslim-Brotherhood-slash-Bank-al-Taqwa milieu, firmly ensconced in Washington and heavily overlapped with the Republican Party. What we're going to do is to review some information from For the Record program number 467, and specifically we're going to take a look at a piece of information from an article in Salon magazine. It's called How Secure is the Department of Homeland Security? That article was authored by Mary Jacoby and was published by Salon magazine on June 22nd of the year 2004. What we're going to take a look at is a document that was taken from the home of Sammy al-Aryan when he was raided. And what this indicates is not only that there was a Muslim Brotherhood effort at infiltrating American intelligence services and the American political and national security establishments, but that, I think, is to be viewed against the background of the project. That was a 1982 document that was taken from the home of Youssef Nada, former Nazi spy, head of Bank al-Taqwa, and we went into that last week. It basically calls for a Muslim Brotherhood takeover of the world, and as I believe, acting as proxies for what I call the Underground Reich. And the document, again, was authored in 1982 by people described by Youssef Nada, in whose home it was found, as Islamic scholars. Apologists for the Brotherhood, apologists for people like Sammy al-Aryan and Youssef Nada, have dismissed the document as an anti-Muslim forgery. Well, Youssef Nada did not deny the authenticity of the document. He simply said he thought he was foolish to keep it around. Well, hindsight is 20/20, but for the legion of apologists for the likes of Nada, Sammy al-Aryan, the Muslim Brotherhood, Nada did not deny its authenticity. And I think the project, the subject of For the Record 537, is to be looked at against the background, or rather, I think the document that we're about to examine is to be looked at against the background of the project. Again, from Salon magazine of June 22nd of 2004, we read, by the way, Abdurrahman al-Amoudi is another associate of Bank al-Taqwa, another associate of Grover Norquist's Islamic Institute, an individual represented by Grover Norquist, and a person who helped donate money to Grover Norquist's Islamic Institute. A document seized in a 1995 raid of a close Alamoudi friend and political ally, former University of South Florida professor Sami El-Aryan, outlined a plan to, quote, infiltrate the sensitive intelligence agencies or the embassies in order to collect information and build close relationships with the people in charge of these establishments. The unsigned document, which authorities believe was authored by El-Aryan in part because it was found among his papers, added, quote, we are in the center which leads the conspiracy against our Islamic world. Our presence in North America gives us a unique opportunity to monitor, explore, and follow up, unquote. It instructed members of the center, unquote, thought to refer to an Islamic think tank that El-Aryan founded, to, quote, collect information from those relatives and friends who work in sensitive positions in government, unquote. And again, this document, believed to have been authored by El-Aryan, was found in his apartment when it was raided. And indeed, I think that the establishment of the Islamic Institute by Grover Norquist, the SAR network, the Safa Trust, its overlap with the GOP, in turn reflecting the heritage of the Muslim Brotherhood, again, an Islamic fascist organization allied with Nazi Germany that jumped first to British intelligence, then to the CIA, was relocated in Saudi Arabia. It morphed into the MAK, the Afghan Mujahideen, Al-Qaeda, Hamas, and Palestinian Islamic Jihad. Palestinian Islamic Jihad, the group with which Sami El-Aryan was affiliated, was one of two offshoots of the Islamic Association of Palestine. The other is Hamas. And at the beginning of the description, for the record, 4538, I'm going to have a picture, a photograph that was taken, a wire service photograph, taken of a Palestinian Islamic Jihad rally from April 15th of 2005, and the attendants are quite obviously giving the Nazis salute. So if some of this seems a little far-fetched, well, bear in mind that the information is not only well-documented, but they say a picture is worth a thousand words. You'll have one hell of a picture at the beginning of the description for this program. It will also be available in the description for 537. It is already at the end of the description for 519. What we're going to look at next concerns a couple of the other aspects of Sami El-Aryan's acquittal. In the first place, we're going to take a look at the fact that due to the foot-dragging by the authorities, the statute of limitations had expired against a lot of what Sami El-Aryan had been up to, and indeed many of his active co-conspirators were out of the United States and could not be placed on trial. Reviewing information from For the Record program number 515, this is a Washington Post article from June 8th of 2005. It's titled, Co-Defendants in Florida Deny Ties to Conspiracy. It's by John Mintz of the Washington Post. It reads in part, three co-defendants of accused terrorist leader Sami El-Aryan, a former Florida University professor on trial here, staunchly deny any connection to the Palestinian terrorist group at the heart of the case, their lawyers said in court Tuesday. There is a vast discrepancy between the gravity and detail in the charges against El-Aryan and those against the other three on trial, whom the prosecution calls rank-and-file members of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad, or PIJ, organization, which sponsors suicide attacks on Israelis, according to court documents. Some defense attorneys said outside the courtroom in recent days that the three defendants, Balut, former university student Sami Taha Hamoudeh, and Illinois charity manager Hatim Maji Fariz, were swept into the case because a prosecutor's need to build a criminal case of conspiracy. In this case, conspiracy to kill and maim hundreds of Israelis since the 1980s. Legal experts said that the U.S. government had little choice but to craft a conspiracy case. Note the following. The vast bulk of their evidence, derived from years of secret wiretaps and monitoring of faxes, centers on the early to mid-1990s, before El-Aryan's offices and home were searched, and he became more circumspect over the telephone. But the statute of limitations allows the prosecution to charge someone for crimes going back only 5 years, unless the charge is conspiracy, in which case the government can bring in allegations going back decades, as it has done in this trial. The problem for the prosecution, defense attorney said, is that those secretly monitored wiretaps and faxes show Al-Arian discussing intimate details of PIJ's operations, not with his three co-defendants, but with five other men. All those five men were top PIJ leaders with Al-Arian for years, U.S. prosecutors said, and all of them have been charged with him with conspiracy to murder, but they are overseas and will not be tried in this case. So please note that. Note that the statute of limitations had expired. Note also that the people with whom he was actively conspiring were overseas and could not be charged in this case. Noting one other aspect of the Sami Al-Arian case, this from a New York Times article by Eric Lichtblau, in turn that was carried in the San Francisco Chronicle of Wednesday, December 7th of 2005, appropriately enough, Pearl Harbor Day. Ex-professor beats terror charges, subtitled Fiery Palestinian Advocate Sami Al-Arian and Three Co-Defendants Cleared in High-Profile Trial, skipping down. But much of the conversation and activity used by prosecutors predated the 1995 designation by the United States of Palestinian Islamic Jihad as a terrorist group, a designation that prohibited Americans from supporting it. Several legal analysts and law professors said Tuesday that the government appeared to have overreached in its case. Well, note also that according to John Loftus, the judge in this case said that basically in order to convict, it had to be proved that the money that was raised by Sami Al-Arian was specifically used for killing people and organizations that are the recipients of money, basically. The money goes into a pool. That's something that would be, for all intents and purposes, impossible to prove. Now, one of the things to consider in connection with the Sami Al-Arian case and the long foot-dragging that took place is not only the tremendous power of the Saudis. Bear in mind, in addition to the fact that they provide much of the oil consumed by the United States, they also have tremendous capital participation in American corporations. Through the Safari Club, they handled much of the outsourced intelligence activity for the U.S. for decades. Bear in mind, too, that the milieu of Sami Al-Arian was the milieu of the SAR Network and the Safa Trust. These were the Islamic charities and businesses that operated out of 555 Grove Street in Herndon, Virginia. They were targeted by the Operation Green Quest raids of March 20th, 2002. And this milieu is heavily overlapped with the Republican Party, with Grover Norquist, with Karl Rove, and with the Bush administration. I suspect that had a lot to do with what was taking place here. We're going to review some information about the relationship between Sami Al-Arian, George Bush, and the SAR Network and the Safa Trust. Now, recall that, as we saw in our discussion with John Loftus, the lawsuit that he filed against Sami Al-Arian ultimately precipitated the Operation Green Quest raids of March 20th of 2002. As we've seen in a number of programs, including For the Records 356, 357, and 454, one of the things that helped to put the whammy on Operation Green Quest was the fact that Talat Altman, a close personal friend and political ally of both George's Bush, and a director of Harkin Energy, one of the younger George Bush's failed energy companies, Talat Altman was a managing director of Grover Norquist's Islamic Institute. And on April 4th of 2002, 2 weeks after the March 20th, 2002 Green Quest raids, he interceded with then Secretary of the Treasury Paul O'Neill, who under whose auspices the raids had been conducted, and basically interceded on behalf of the targets of the interview, of the raid, I should say. Paul O'Neill was dismissed some 8 months later. Eventually, Operation Green Quest was transferred from the Treasury Department to the Department of Homeland Security, where, with the assistance of the Justice Department and the FBI under Robert Mueller, Operation Green Quest was basically deep-sixed. We should note that the U.S. refused to provide information to the Swiss authorities that could have helped to convict Youssef Nada of Bank al-Taqwa. And I would also note that the Department of Homeland Security, headed up by Michael Chertoff, helped to frustrate that. Chertoff himself had represented Dr. Magdi El-Amir, who a New Jersey-based physician who had also apparently channeled money to al-Qaeda. So note, in connection with the deep-sixing of the investigation against Sami El-Aryan, that it is part of a larger picture. The Sami El-Aryan case overlaps Operation Green Quest, and these individuals, terrorists in the most unequivocal terms, are heavily overlapped with the Bush administration, and in turn, they are outcroppings of the Muslim Brotherhood and Islamic fascist organization dating back to World War II. We're going to turn to For the Record program number 464, and we're going to review some information from the book Blood from Stones, The Secret Financial Network of Terror by Douglas Farah. That was published in hardcover by Broadway Books, copyright 2004. By the way, Douglas Farah has done some good work for The Washington Post about Operation Green Quest. Turning to Blood from Stones, and again reading from the description from For the Record 464, of the relationship between Sami El-Aryan, the Saar Foundation, and the Safa Trust, the focal point of the March 20, 2002 raids precipitated by John Loftus's lawsuit, we read, "In the early morning hours of Wednesday, March 20th of 2002, 150 federal agents, many with their guns drawn, raided 14 offices and homes in the suburbs of Washington, D.C. FBI and customs agents loaded 7 panel trucks with more than 500 boxes of documents, computers, and financial records of more than 100 charities, think tanks, and businesses affiliated with the Herndon, Virginia-based Saar Foundation. Most of the interrelated businesses and charities were run out of a single office at 555 Grove Street, a brown brick and glass three-story office complex on a quiet street. The Saar Foundation, the backbone of the cluster, takes its name from Suleiman Abdul Aziz Al-Raji, head of one of Saudi Arabia's wealthiest families who funneled millions of dollars through the cluster of businesses and charities. The Al-Raji name was on the golden chain list of early Al-Qaeda supporters that was found in the benevolence files in Sarajevo. The Saar Foundation was incorporated in Herndon, Virginia on July 29, 1983, and formally dissolved on December 28, 2000. However, many of the Foundation's functions were taken over by the Safa Trust, an organization registered at the same address and run by several of the same board members. Law enforcement officials dubbed the maze of the overlapping companies with shared directors the Safa Group. The groups often financed each other, sending the money in circles. The scores of Safa organizations are controlled by about 15 Middle Eastern and Pakistani men who serve with each other on a host of institutional boards. 4 senior leaders of the network are Iraqis who had lived in Saudi Arabia and have been members of the Muslim Brotherhood. In the United States, the men used Saudi money to launch some of the nation's leading Muslim organizations. In 1983, with money from the Al-Raji family, the Saar Foundation was born. The director was Yaqub Mirza, a Pakistani native with a Ph.D. in physics from the University of Texas. Other groups were formed shortly afterward. 5 of the top Safa executives live in spacious homes on adjoining lots in Safa Court in Herndon, a 22-acre parcel of land bought by one of the Saar-affiliated firms in 1987. By the way, interjecting, Yaqub Mirza is also a key member of the board of directors of the P-Tech company. That's a software company that developed a threat assessment software for the United States Air Force and for NORAD, and also handled the sensitive software for a number of other organizations as well, including the U.S. Department of Energy. I suspect that had a lot to do. Also, let's not forget, they developed the software for the Federal Aviation Administration as well. I suspect that the P-Tech company, which was in such a pivotal position vis-a-vis the threat assessment software of the FAA, the Air Force, and NORAD, and was basically the PTEC company was an outgrowth of the Al-Taqwa/Muslim Brotherhood network. I suspect that had much to do with the anomalous performance of air defense units on September 11th. Continuing with our analysis of the SAR network, the Safa Trust, and its relationship to the recently acquitted Sami Al-Arian, Bush's buddy, in time, the Safa network owned or invested in scores of businesses worldwide. Dairy farms in Zimbabwe, schools in the Ivory Coast, a huge poultry business in the state of Georgia, an Islamic mutual fund in Washington State, an investment company in Malaysia, shell companies in Panama, and commercial apple orchards in Chile. By the late 1980s, the SAR Foundation had become one of the Washington, D.C. region's biggest landlords. Quote, "The funds came very easily," unquote, said a businessman who dealt with SAR. "If they wanted a few million dollars, they called the Al-Rajis, who would send it along," unquote. At the same time, the leaders of the SAR Foundation incorporated and sat on the boards of charities and nonprofit organizations. Many were branches of Saudi charities that operate worldwide. Operation Green Quest was launched in October 2001 as part of the Customs Service initiative to track bin Laden's financial empire. In a small, windowless conference room, Green Quest agents charted the Byzantine relationships among the more than 100 Safa network entities, a spider web of overlapping names and organizations. Green Quest investigators also charted the relationship among the Safa network entities and the Muslim Brotherhood through the Al-Taqwa management empire of Youssef Nada. U.S. officials said they had tracked about $20 million from Safa entities flowing through Nada's bank Al-Taqwa, but said the total could be much higher. The ties between Nada and Safa leaders were many and long-standing, as were their ties to other Brotherhood leaders. Two members of the Safa group helped set up Bank Al-Taqwa in the Bahamas, and several Safa leaders loaned Nada money. In 1976, two other men who later became prominent in the Safa group founded Nada International, a Brotherhood bank in Liechtenstein. For a time, Suleiman Abdul Al-Raji, the SAR Foundation founder, worked for Nada at that bank. Nada International was designated a terrorist financier by the Treasury Department after 9/11. SAR leader said the $1.8 billion was reported. By the way, this is some of the money that was involved in a huge discrepancy between what SAR reported and what they actually had on hand. Skipping down, SAR Network said the $1.8 billion was reported because of a clerical error, despite the fact that the 10-digit number, $1,783,545,883, was repeated at least seven times on the form. Sharif Sedki, the foundation's treasurer, said that he, quote, did not recall, unquote, that amount of money flowing through the company. There's another thread in the Safa network that has drawn scrutiny from federal investigators. For the last 5 years of its existence, the treasurer of the SAR Foundation, the group's central entity, was Sharif Sedki, an American lawyer representing the Al-Raji family. Sedki is also the representative and business partner of Khalid bin Mahfouz, one of the wealthiest men in the world and longtime banker to the Saudi royal family. The Safa group might have escaped scrutiny in 2001 if not for a raid that occurred 7 years earlier, leading to another thread of investigation. In 1995, the FBI raided the home and offices of Sami Al-Arian, a Kuwaiti-Palestinian computer science professor at the University of South Florida in Tampa. The feds suspected Al-Arian, a slight bearded and balding man, was secretly funneling money to terrorists. They believe he was a senior member of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad, a group that unleashes suicide bombers against Israelis. Al-Arian was a vocal activist on Palestinian causes, and he frequently spoke at Islamic conferences. At one 1991 conference, Al-Arian, dressed in the flowing robes of an imam, was videotaped shouting in Arabic, "Let us damn America! Let us damn Israel! Let us damn their allies until death," unquote. In the early 1990s, Al-Arian set up organizations to raise money for orphans and widows in the study of Islam. He used the organization to sponsor Muslim conferences, including one that featured Omar Abdul Rahman, the blind sheikh who instigated the 1993 World Trade Center attack. Al-Arian also sponsored the U.S. visa of Ramadan Abdullah Shalah, who joined Al-Arian on the university faculty from 1992 to 1994. But Shalah suddenly disappeared in October of 1995, immediately following the assassination of Palestinian Islamic Jihad leader Fateh Ibrahim Shekaki. Shalah resurfaced a few days later at Shekaki's funeral in Damascus, where the slain leader's body was taken with full military honors. Shalah, standing by the casket, had been named Shekaki's successor. Al-Arian said he was, quote, shocked, unquote, at Shalah's ties to PIJ, but the FBI finally swooped in. The raid on Al-Arian led to the Safa Group. The FBI found letters documenting Safa entities' financial support of Al-Arian to the tune of tens of thousands of dollars a year. In a September 7, 1993 letter, Safa Group leaders told one Al-Arian-led group, quote, "We consider you a part of us and an extension of us, and we as a part of you," unquote, adding that their financial donation of tens of thousands of dollars was, quote, "for you as a group, regardless of the party or facade you use the donation for," unquote. But the Al-Arian and Safa Group investigations languished. In the 2000 elections, Al-Arian supported George W. Bush, urging Muslims to vote Republican as the best hope of ending discrimination against Arab Americans. Al-Arian and his family were photographed with a beaming Bush and his wife Laura during a Florida campaign stop. Al-Arian liked to boast that he had delivered, quote, considerably more, unquote, than the 537 votes that gave Bush his victory in Florida and allowed him to capture the White House. On June 20, 2001, Al-Arian was invited to the White House as part of a large delegation of Muslims to be briefed by presidential advisor Karl Rove. Now turning to the book House of Bush, House of Saud by Craig Unger. In 2002, during the presidency of George W. Bush, Otman, that's Talat Otman, a director of Harkin Energy, again won access to the White House and met with Secretary of the Treasury Paul O'Neill to discuss U.S. government raids on Muslim charities that were allegedly funding terror, unquote. Those are the Operation Green Quest raids on the SAR Network and the Safa Trust. Note what followed on the heels of that, in addition to the dismissal of Paul O'Neill as Secretary of the Treasury. In December 2003, clerks at a federal courthouse in Tampa, quote, accidentally, unquote, destroyed search warrants in the Al-Arian case. The documents contained affidavits from federal agents that supported 1995 searches of Al-Arian's home and offices and were among thousands of documents shredded sometime between 1998 and 2002. As this book went to press, there were serious questions as to whether the destruction of the documents might affect his prosecution, unquote. Well, it's a pretty good bet that it probably did, in addition to many of the other irregularities that we've already spoken about. Again, note that Al-Arian, Safa Trust, SAR Network, Muslim Brotherhood, Bank Al-Taqwa Milieu, very close to and overlapped with the GOP and the Bush administration, as well as overlapped with and an extension of the underground Reich. Do use the Spitfire website, www.spitfirelist.com, and the many wonderful linked websites and URLs, a wealth of information that will help to flesh out your understanding on these matters, including a growing number of these old anti-fascist books. That concludes Side 2 of For the Record program number 538, Bush's Buddy, the acquittal of Sammy the Aryan, being recorded on December 11th of 2005. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.